this is Robin Ayu from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode. Well, this episode, I think that's the second today, but we're recording episode 205 today, and with this particular episode, I really appreciate you coming along with me on the journey of the recording of this episode and along the way for 2.5 years. I really appreciate all the guests and that they are coming to this channel for a conversation. I enjoy the conversation as much as our audience does, and proven by 2 million views every 7 days now we're averaging, and also about 120,000 downloads every couple of months on the audio side. I really appreciate the exposure, the conversation, the likes, the share. This channel will not happen without the guests that they're coming onto the channel and the audience that they're enjoying the content. At least that's what they tell me. So thank you so much for being part of the journey here along with me today. My guest today spent over a decade inside the science of the brain, neuropsychology, neuropsychological assessment, cognitive neurosciences. And you know me from this channel. I've talked a lot about those topics. I've had several podcasts on the topic here. The whole clinical research world, that's where my guest has lived for the past 10 years in their career. Then she became a freelancer, and then she burnt out. And instead of quietly recovering and moving on, she asked a question that the psychology field has almost entirely ignored. What does burnout actually look like when you work alone? When you're a freelancer, obviously you're working alone. How do you manage that? No manager, no colleagues, no organizational structure to hold you. Today, she runs freelanceburnout.com, works with freelancers to help them understand and navigate the psychological dynamics for solo work. Burnout, isolation, uncertainty, without losing themselves in the process. I have been looking forward to this conversation. I've been looking forward to meeting my guest of honor today for a long time. We've been exchanging emails on LinkedIn. We've been prepping for this. And one of the questions my guest today asked me, you know, what do I need to do to prep for this conversation? I said, just show up. I'll do the prep work. And we'll ask the question and we'll surprise the audience. And I want to make sure that we today we give this topic, because such a serious topic, burnout for freelancers, give it enough importance that people are educating themselves on the topic. Try to perhaps come out from this conversation with few notes that they can take to prep in their life, to work with them with those advice in their life to minimize the burnout. Welcome, occupational psychologist Mital Rezas, to the conversation. Welcome to the Localization Fireside Chat, Mital.
Thank you for having me, Robin. Really happy.
I really appreciate it. And I was commenting earlier to Mital on her beautiful smile on her picture on LinkedIn. And, you know, you light up the conversation. I really appreciate you with me today. Let's start with the easy one, Mital, if you don't mind. Everybody's got a story. And I ask this question every time I got a guest on this channel. What is your story? Give us your personal journey.
Okay, so there's like a little story that I always share, because for me, it really captures the paradox that I'm a psychologist and I specialize in occupational psychology, and I've even researched burnout in the past, even worked on organizational guidelines. And still, it took me a long time to realize that what I was going through was actually burnout. And I guess that's where my story really begins. So I do have the background in neuropsychology and the specialization in occupational psychology. And I'm also a freelancer. And over the past few years, I've been building this project called freelanceburnout.com, where I create tools and work with freelancers at different stages of burnout. But I will start from the beginning. I've been working in applied psychology for over a decade, like assessment, consulting, researched, first as an employee and for the past 8 years as a freelancer. And then about 3 years ago, we relocated to Madrid. It was a new country, new language, new schools, new everything. There was a lot of adaptation on every level. And actually, the only thing that stayed stable during that time was my work. And I worked a lot. And after about a year, something just wasn't right anymore. And the tricky thing with burnout, especially as a freelancer, is that it's really hard to point at it. Because from the outside, I was functioning and everything looked fine. But something in the structure of my work made it really hard to slow down or even notice what was happening. And like, of course, there were signs like more anxiety or more tension or this constant restlessness. But at the time, it felt like explainable, like maybe it's the relocation, maybe it's this stage of life, maybe it's just a busy period. Until one moment, I remember very clearly, we were walking in the park, like my husband, my two girls, and I. And suddenly my older daughter shouted, "Come on, mom, you're so slow." And I remember I looked up and they were all way ahead of me. And in that moment, I just knew something was off, because that never happens. Like, I've always been a fast walker. I'm known for that. And suddenly I realized my tempo had changed. And that moment really stayed with me, because it wasn't just about walking slower. It was this feeling that I'm not myself anymore. And that's a very painful realization. Like, when you feel like you're losing parts of who you are, and you don't fully recognize yourself anymore. So for me, that was the moment I thought, okay, something is definitely not okay. This isn't just stress or just anxiety or just a rough period. There is something deeper going on, and I can feel it's connected to my work. So I started thinking about it more deeply. And then I was wondering, like, could this actually be burnout? And at that point, I knew I had to really understand what was happening. So I guess this point was where everything was really starting to shift. I started looking for answers. I read, I listened, I searched for tools around burnout. And honestly, nothing really spoke to me. Like, I kept hearing the same messages: to working too much, you need better boundaries, take better care of yourself. And then the advice was always something like, work less, or take more time for yourself, or do more of what you enjoy. And I remember thinking, none of this makes sense. Like, because
sounds like cliche to me. It sounds like cliches.
And it's not even solutions, because unless it comes with bags of money attached to it, it's like, I don't understand how it's supposed to work. For a freelancer, like, work less, how? For me, this was a period where I was working around the clock and I needed the income, and reducing work just wasn't an option. So the real question for me became not how do I work less, but how do I deal with burnout when working less is not an option? So I kept going and I kept researching and talking to other freelancers. And at some point, something really clicked for me, that we're using the same word, burnout, to describe very different experiences. And freelance burnout is not the same as employee burnout. So before I get into that, I think there's something really important to say. Most of what we know about burnout today, both in research and in practice, comes from studying people inside organizations. Okay, so a lot of the foundational work was built around the relationship between an employee and their job. So even the way we define burnout and the way we think about it is deeply rooted in that context.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the confusion begins, because we're using the same word, burnout, for very different realities.
And you're using, is that what you mean by maybe we're using the wrong data to assess burnout? Because it's based on old data. You mentioned employee.
Yes, old data. And also, till today, most of the research is on employees inside organizations. Almost nobody checking the freelancers. And there is a really big difference, because let's take, for example, from real life. If we take a salaried employee inside an organization, when something in their behavior starts to change, there's someone who notices, right? Like a colleague, a manager, maybe someone from HR whose, like, job, by the way, is to notice these things, their whole department for it. Someone sees it and someone asks, "How are you? What's going on? Are you okay? If your performance drops, you're more tired, you take more sick days," someone sees it. And usually something happens, like there might be a conversation or an adjustment. But the key point is this: those employees are seen. And because they are seen, something responds. Like, maybe they get time off, or their hours are reduced, or maybe the workload is adjusted. I know there are some organizations offer even psychological support. Some work with external providers, kind of platforms and apps. Yeah. Either way, the system responds. And interestingly, the way this person is perceived is often quite positive, because those employees are seen as dedicated and committed, and someone who worked hard, maybe too hard, someone the organization wants to keep. And burnout in this context often comes with positive labels like commitment and responsibility.
And yeah, I've seen that. You're right. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah, it is. And taking time off because you work too much makes sense, right? No one looks at you strangely. It's actually kind of...
Oh, no, I can name a few people they look at you strangely. But yeah, that's right. But that's the concept.
That's a bad thing, actually, if they look at it like you. Like, it's part of the illness. But on the other side, there's the freelancers. And for us, the situation is completely different. Because if something changes, usually no one sees it because there's no colleague in that context and no manager and no HR department and no one whose role is to notice. So those questions don't really get asked. And sometimes performance drops, but it looks like a personal failure and the energy disappears, but there's no sick leave to take and motivation fades, but the work still needs to get done. So there's no conversation and no adjustment and no response. And more than anything, there's no recognition because in freelance work, burnout is structurally invisible. It exists, obviously, but nothing around it registers that it does. So the freelancer isn't seen as someone who works too much. We are seen mostly by ourselves as someone who can't cope, someone who should manage better, someone who needs to figure it out alone. So there's no legitimacy and there are no safety nets and no shared responsibility. And from what I've seen, that's where the shame enters the story.
Because I'm imagining from a freelance point of view, you are your own HR department, you are your own
marketing department,
payroll, marketing, etc. You know, everything revolves around you. And, you know, I left the corporate world not too long ago, October last year, when I left the corporate world after a career of 40 years in various corporations. The last one lasted about 25 years in one corporation. And I can attest to that. I mean, now that I'm outside of the corporate world as a freelancer, A, I feel like relieved and I have like a t-shirt that says, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm out of my PTSD now from my corporate life. And I'm truly, you know, going back to the roots of who I am as an individual, trying to live my life as what I was intending to be or intended to work, you know, because everything affects everything around you. I mean, your daughter noticed you in the park that you're slowing down, but there may be some other exhibits out there that people around you notices, but either A, they're shy to tell you, and B, we have too much pride in what we do. We don't even pay attention to that stuff.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think shame is a really important component of this freelance burnout package, because I'll give you a personal example. When I started working on freelanceburnout.com, like writing about it, speaking about it, people around me were a bit confused. Like even in our families, my parents, my husband's parents, the reaction was something like, that's great, but why this? Like, how is that connected to you? You know? And like, for me, it was the most obvious thing. I was burned out. I'm in this mess like for more than a year now. So obviously I'm going to work on it, but they never seen it. And the truth is no one really knew. Like even my husband for quite a while didn't fully know what I was going through. It's a really, the shame is really internal part of it, because beyond the obvious kinds of shame, like comparing yourself to your employee friends, like those with the high salaries and the benefits and the great jobs, or to other freelancers who seem very successful, there are parts of this experience we don't talk about at all, like not even with the people closest to us, like hiding a client who canceled so you don't worry your partner, or sometimes not even fully admitting to yourself that you're not where you thought you would be, like not at this stage of your career or not at this stage of your life. And that can start to touch something deeper, like your sense of identity. And when that happens, a lot of the time we try to protect ourselves. Like we don't talk about it, we don't name it. And that's exactly where the shame stays. And I can tell you that when I started digging into freelance burnout, I went back to LinkedIn after years of not using that platform. Now, remember, because I hate social media, but I have to now. But I remember I typed freelance burnout in the search bar, and there was almost nothing there, which really surprised me because I knew I wasn't the only one. There's no way. So I started writing about it and sharing what I was seeing and what I was experiencing and talking to other freelancers. And pretty quickly, like days and 2 weeks later, something shifted, not just in terms of reach, which was crazy, by the way, 3,000% more in 2-3 weeks, but what was happening behind the scenes, because alongside the likes and the comments, I started getting private messages. So many freelancers writing to me with really personal stories. And that's what struck me the most, like how many people wanted to talk about this, just not in public. And then I realized, no freelancer is going to post on LinkedIn, I'm burned out and I'm struggling. Like, it's a professional suicide. Who's going to hire you after that? So the conversation stays hidden. And in that space, it starts to feel like it's just you and you're alone with it. And for me, that's when I knew I had to step forward and start talking about it and to find tools to handle it.
You know, for the audience, just wanted to state that the World Health Organization classifies burnout as an occupational phenomenon, not a medical condition. That distinctions matter, to be honest with you, and creates a gap between what we define as a humanity as burnout, and everybody defines it differently. It depends on where they are, what they're doing, and where they're living, etc. Living condition also, you know, part of that. Now, for those who are out there, and they probably have a burnout, but they don't know they have a burnout. And what is the definition of burnout? Not the LinkedIn version, because he's, you know, I know you don't like LinkedIn that much, but what is it psychologically? Like, how does somebody can do self-diagnostics and say to themselves and say, yeah, you know what, maybe I have a burnout?
It's funny, even all the classic assessments there are today are like built on employees in organizations. I built another assessment that is for freelancers because it's really different.
Is it on your website, Mital?
Yeah, it's on my website. It's actually 2-3 minutes questionnaire, and it's of course free, and it can give you a sense of, because it's not just, am I burned out? Okay, yes, you are burned out. But for me, what I found the most important is where, because sometimes burnout looks like a really big cloud over you. It's really big, and it's like everything is not okay. You can't put your finger on what specifically is the problem when you freelance, or because it's like everything is attached to everything and you can't really find it. So for me, the question was not, am I burned out? The question was, what is the thing that is stressing me the most? Where is most of my energy going to? And for your question, like how, I'm sorry, it was for a freelancer, how to diagnose?
Yeah, like how do they know that they're burned out? They probably burned out and they don't know it.
Yeah, I describe freelance burnout as a state when the way you work stops supporting you and starts working against you. It's like psychologically your system is under constant load for too long of everything. Like people became more reactive and more anxious and more sensitive, and everything become harder, like even to get up in the morning and to start your work and do new stuff, obviously, and decision-making, everything is heavier and harder. And it's always not only in your work, of course, it's always.
Just to make it a little bit more precise, do you distinguish from being tired, stressed, or depressed, or burnout, or are they on the same continuum?
That's a really important question, because it's also a tricky one, because in real life, this.
I'm not a psychologist, but I play one on TV, by the way.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Because in real life, these things don't show up separately, right? Burnout can absolutely include elements of anxiety and stress and even depression. So it's not really about this or that. It's more about the intensity and the frequency and context. And with burnout, what I often see, especially with freelancers, obviously, is that a lot of what they are experiencing is very tied to their work reality, like the pressure and the uncertainty and the constant mental load. And those emotional states build up around that. If I need to give like 3 clear signs, they would be a constant sense of pressure that doesn't really go away, and things that used to feel simple start to feel heavy, and the growing sense of disconnection from work. Like every freelancer described the same pattern of something is not working over there anymore. And there are similar symptoms in depression, like low energy and the disconnection and feeling like you're not yourself. So the distinction isn't always clean, and honestly, it doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be.
I think Yeah, I think the more helpful question is what's happening to me and how much is it affecting my life? And also, am I able to carry this on my own or not anymore? Because at a certain point, if what you're experiencing feel persistent and intense or overwhelming, that's the moment to reach out to a professional, not necessarily to get a label, but to not stay alone with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, your background is in neuropsychology. What actually happening in the brain during a burnout? What do you see in a brain scan?
I didn't search a brain scan while working on the freelance burnout project. I guess because it evolves depression and anxiety, you'll see the same reactions. For the brain, being a long time is under so many stress and for a long period. And in freelancers, one of the main issues is the responsibility, because it's all up to them. Like when you're in an organization, there are safety nets and there is someone who keeping you from the market, your contract, you have like a sense of certainty. And when you're a freelancer, you're usually suffering from this chronic uncertainty because it's all up to you and it's all shifting and evolving and changing. And you need to hold it on by yourself. So being in such a stress for a long time, that has its costs. So I guess that it's really interesting to look for it. I'm going to do it now.
Now, when we talk about burnout, you make a distinction actually between isolation as a specific driver, be it a freelancer, obviously you're isolated, not loneliness. So something structural, meaning that I work alone, I'm in charge of my own destiny. I don't have a payroll coming. I have to generate my own income. There's no certainty anymore in my life. There's that entrepreneurial uncertainty, which, you know, it could be, you know, said down the road that entrepreneurs normally feels that way because they take the risk and they jump in and they build something out of nothing. And all of a sudden there's something going on there, either like create revenue streams, create products and services, etc. Can you explain the distinction between isolation and loneliness?
Yeah. This component of the isolation is part of what I developed, which called the 5 freelance burnout conditions. And it's 5 structural conditions that tend to show up again and again. And it things like working in a fully digital environment, for example, being professionally alone, what we talked about, we have no colleagues and no other departments, and you usually by yourself. And since COVID, lots of freelancers are also working only remotely. So it's like another layer of loneliness and the blurred boundaries between the physical boundaries and psychological boundaries. When you work, sometimes lots of freelancers work from home. I work from home and it's hard to make those adjustments sometimes. And when you like work a lot and you have like the family in your house, it's not easy. And it's not easy to switch off at the end of the day, because for a freelancer, you always have more to do. So to say, okay, that's enough for today. It's not like you're dropping your pen at 5 p.m. and 3 p.m. I think here in Spain. But you're always on that.
Moving like to Spain, man. Days. It's 3 p.m. I'm moving to Spain. If it's 3 p.m.
Yeah, they know how to live around here. And also there's this, the constant self-management when it's all up to you and you have all the responsibilities. And if you didn't do marketing this week, you're going to have a problem like the weeks ahead. And also the ongoing uncertainty, which is also a crucial part. So each of these on its own is like manageable, but together they create a system where burnout isn't surprising, like it's almost built in. And that shift from what's wrong with me to what in this structure is creating pressure is usually where things start to change. So in my assessment, the one on the website, we actually figuring out where is most of the stress sitting, like in the, if it's the ongoing uncertainty, if it's the blurred boundaries. And from that, you can start movement. So I think that's like the first step for people who feels exhausted or burned out or like thinking if they're already there.
Now, a lot of our listeners to this channel, they are language professionals, translators, interpreters, remote localization managers. What makes them particularly exposed in your views? Because I'm assuming there are differences between, let's say, a freelance who has an outgoing personality, we call it the extrovert, versus somebody who is an engineer or a translation manager or a localization manager or a translator, tend to be a little bit on the introvert, generalizing. I'm generalizing, obviously, here, but just to give the audience some perspective, how does these individuals get impacted?
I think, and I actually happen to know a lot of translators from this community.
And they're freelancers, right?
Freelancers, yeah. Which, like, they're, to be a freelancer, sometimes they find the jobs, if they are this introverts, they can find the best jobs for them, like behind the scenes and doing what they good at and what they love, and they enjoy it. And sometimes I think the past decade, the job starts evolving, and now when social media is more present, they suddenly need to step, like, to be in the front, and they need to do more marketing, and they need to be more out in the open. And I find that it's very hard for people from those fields to do it because they didn't choose it. And also, it's like the type of the job of translators, it is like freelancers jobs, and not everyone are built for freelancing, you know? Like, there are certain people who their parents were like a parent who was a freelancer, entrepreneur, and they've seen this. They grew up in a house where they seen their dad like taking risks and doing stuff that are out of the norm, and there's not only certainty around them. So those people might have more freelancer attitude. They can manage those complexities more easily, like in comparison to people who didn't. Like, I can say for me, I'm not a freelancer in my personality. I really wanted to work in an organization. I was a very good employee, and I didn't have what it takes to be a freelancer. And I didn't want to be a freelancer, but I had the choice, because when I had my first daughter, I realized it's more important for me to be at home with her and to have a flexible job. So there's no organization is going to hire me like this. So I have to be a freelancer, but then I don't know how to be a freelancer because I can't stand chronic uncertainty. It drives me crazy, and I don't want to do everything on my own, but I have to do it. So you need to learn how to adjust yourself. So I think in those fields, it takes a bit more. And what I see even more at the last couple of months is the all AI changes, especially in the translation community, because it changed your world completely, if I get it right. It's like really less jobs, and like the market has really changed. And I think one of the deeper things happening here is that it's not about the technology, it's about, again, the identity. Because for a long time, many of us built a very stable sense of self around what we do, our skills, our profession. That's where our confidence and often our self-worth come from. And when that starts to shift, whether it's because of AI or any other change, it creates a very disorienting moment. And I see it a lot among freelance translators, because the question is no longer just, what should I do next? It becomes, who am I? This is no longer the center of what I do. And that's not just a practical question. You know, it's a psychological one, because it feels like the ground is shifting under our feet. Like, maybe all of that, nothing. Like, maybe we're no longer relevant. Like, those are sentences I heard. And that brings up anxiety on so many levels. So it's really, really hard. And I can see it right now. Mm-hmm. And I guess your next question is going to be, so what can you do?
Yeah, like, I mean, just wondering here, I mean, you're pointing to a couple of things. One is the amount of work, and then the changes around that, meaning technology shift or process procedure shift or whatever the shift happened to be. It's not just the amount of work. It is everything around it, the tools, the processes, et cetera, which adds, and probably personal obligations to kids, family, anything else that you may be, you know, an individual who's focusing on a single job versus focusing on multi things could lead to a burnout, because not necessarily the burnout is coming from work. I mean, could be. I mean, the big majority of our life we live at work, but it could have other input to the burnout?
I think it's the one of the biggest misconceptions that burnout is just about working too much. Because for freelancers, it's not just the workload, it's the uncertainty, and it's the lack of structure, and it's the fact that everything rests on you. So people keep trying to solve it with things like boundaries or time off, but the issue is much more structural.
I think economically, we pushed a whole bunch of people to go work as a freelancers, economically. I don't think, when you say to somebody, go work freelancer, meaning that you are asking them to become an entrepreneur on their own, which is not necessarily a direction they thought they will go to do when they went to college and they studied. They probably thought, hey, I graduate, I go work for a company, and now you're asking me, oh, I need to do my own payroll. I got to pay my own expenses. I got to pay the invoices myself. I don't know how to do all this. And then I have to raise a family and do all that stuff. So I think, you know, when you build a building and you put a nice foundation underneath and then the building grows and everything's fine. But if you put the foundation wrong and then you end up with the wrong structure on top of it, I think there's some of that going.
Yeah, but what can you do? You need to adjust, right? You have to change because life is life and you're not always like
getting. No, you have to deal with it. I mean, lemonade from lemon, I guess people say.
Yeah.
I got to make lemonade out of lemon. So you had a job, you don't have a job anymore. You got to go work from home. You got to figure it out.
Yeah. And I think there's something very important to say here that with all the AI revolution and stuff, like people feel they're not relevant and all they did in their life is no longer relevant. And it's important to say that nothing you've learned, built, or developed in your life is irrelevant. Actually, the opposite is true. And what I tell to freelancers I work with is it's always your unique way of thinking and your experience and your perspective. Those are exactly what become more valuable now.
The value that you bring in as a human, as a professional.
Yeah, yeah. So I think the first step is to shift the question, like instead of asking, how do I compete with AI? Because obviously we can't, we need to start asking what is actually mine here? Like what is my value actually based on? What is the way I think, I see things, the way I approach problems that isn't easily replicated? And then the work becomes less about catching up and more about learning how to bring that into the tools that are now available. Because there are many more tools that we could use.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, this is episode 205, I think. And we've talked about AI on every single episode for 2.5 years. And it just feels to me that it's causing so much anxiety in people. The psychological effect of AI on people who either didn't ask for the technology or don't care if there's a new technology coming in. They don't see technology as, wow, I mean, I'm one of those guys. I mean, I studied computer science in college. So when there is a new technology coming in, I jump up and down and enjoy. I like to discover. But there are people out there, many people out there, they say, I don't care. So the point is, technology sometimes, specifically in this case, it's causing a lot of anxiety in people, psychological pressure.
Yeah, because people are actually afraid of it. I can give you an example. I worked with a designer who spent years developing his own visual language, his sense of style and taste. And when AI tools started generating designs within seconds, his first reaction was really intense. Like he said, if this can be done without me, then what exactly is my role now? Like I'm jobless. And what shifted wasn't just learning how to use AI, it was redefining what he actually offers. And with time, he realized he's not just someone who produces designs, he's someone who brings direction and taste and meaning into the process. And his experience also allows him to understand what the client really wants. So instead of going through endless prompts and ask AI a trillion times and still getting something that's only 90% right, he can get much closer to 100% in less time. So once that became clear, AI actually made him faster because he was using it now and he could keep his voice and his unique style, but work more efficiently and even take on more clients. So the shift wasn't just technical. It was understanding that a designer is never just a designer. And often that's exactly where the human advantage is.
Yeah, one of the things we talked about earlier in my earlier podcast this morning, it was what level of education right now, what's the assessment out there from an understanding where AI is? So if I was, you know, if we would take a scan across every employee out there or every freelancer out there, what is the level the depth of understanding the technology that we're talking about, AI in this case. In a lot of cases, and I've seen it firsthand, people superficially understand what AI is because we understand it from a conversation with ChatGPT or Claude or Perplexity, one of those. But nobody really dug into the depth of the technology, try to figure out, okay, so from a surface, it does ABC, but if I go a little deeper, I can see a lot of potential here in supporting me and making each individual one of us. Each one of us now has the possibility of becoming the army of one. It is amazing the amount of things we can do now as single individuals that we did not have the opportunity to do before. And people miss that. And that's where the anxiety came from, because people are afraid of the unknown. Technology is going to replace me. I hear that all the time. Technology is going to replace me. It's going to take away my job. I mean, this is your designer friend. It's the same idea. Everywhere it's going to be repeated. And if I boil all these conversations down, if you peel the onion, try to understand where this conversation comes, it's lack of education. We don't understand it well enough. We don't understand the implication enough. And we don't understand where do we fit that into our jobs, into our whatever we do in daily life, etc. I mean, I work, my wife doesn't work, and she uses ChatGPT all the time. More than me. I don't know what she does with this, but she's having conversations with ChatGPT more than she has conversations with me.
That's something to look at.
I'm looking into this.
It's all over the place right now. Like, people are doing everything with it and at the same time are really scared from it. It's like, when it's going to replace me, when I'm no longer relevant. But instead of, as you're saying, like, to see what's advantages, and there are huge advantages, like, people who use it correctly can now make things that they were never making before, or in days now. It's amazing how quickly it made everything goes.
Now, in your world, like, just to go back a little bit, when you were burnt out, can you tell me what it actually felt like? What did it feel like? Not clinically, but personally. And when did you first notice? I know you said, like, when your daughter told you, like, in the park, the incident in the park. Was there other indications?
Well, it was all the stress. And the thing with burnout, and it doesn't look dramatic from the outside, because people are still functioning, you know, but internally there's a constant sense of pressure, which is not going. And there's a lot of mental noise, too many open loops at once. And simple things starts to feel heavy, like waking up in the morning was hell for me. And it wasn't like this before. And starting work, I starting to like not like my work anymore, like didn't even know where to begin to do my stuff. It was, there's also this feeling of being always on, like you can't fully switch off. It's never ending, and it feels like it's never gonna end.
And was it like a single moment for you? Or was it more like a slow erosion?
It was, I'm always look at this like a spiral, like I was spiraling. I felt that something is wrong. That moment in the park was really a moment for me that I noticed it, because it was in my face. And when I was walking, I was like, I realized I was in my own world. I wasn't even with them. And then when my daughter called me, and suddenly it was like, I'm not okay. I'm not me anymore. And you know, people always say you look at yourself in the mirror and you're not recognizing yourself. So that time, it was the first time I really understood that sentence. Like, I was looking in the mirror and I didn't recognize myself. Like, it was a different personality, and it wasn't in a good way. Like, everything I liked about myself, I felt that it's like something is eating me from inside and taking all the good parts. Like, I'm, and it's all like in tiny stuff. You can say that I wasn't functioning, I didn't get out of bed. No, I did everything like normal, but inside it's like eating you up. So
now,
that's the problem.
With your academic background, did that make it easier or make it harder? Because you already identified the problem because you studied that stuff. So.
Yeah. But then again, that's the paradox. I didn't see it. Like, there's it coming. But when I noticed, I started developing tools, because for me, it was on survival mode. I looked for solutions online and read all I can find on burnout, and nothing helped me. And I said, okay, I can't run another day, and I need to find tools. I need to find solutions. I need to find something that will allow me to keep going and to stop feeling so bad about myself. So I started developing those tools, and I guess that's like when my background really helped me and saved me from this. And as I said before, like, one of the biggest challenges with freelance burnout is that it doesn't feel like one clear problem. you don't know where to begin. It's like a cloud where everything is mixed together and it's hard to tell what's actually driving it.
Yeah.
So instead of asking, am I burned out? Because I knew, okay, I am. I started asking what's actually driving the pressure right now. Because when everything feels urgent, you can't rely on intuition, you know? So I broke it down into a few core elements just to make things clearer. And I created this short assessment and I developed what I call a safety floor, something that helps you stay stable even when freelance life is unstable. And there's like, I love to use the ocean as my metaphor for freelance work, because choosing to work independently is choosing to swim in open water. And there's freedom and there's movement and there's space, but there are also currents. And the thing about the ocean is we're never fully immune to it. Having experienced burnout once doesn't guarantee it won't happen again. So as long as we choose to stay in this freelance ocean, we need to learn how to swim better and float when needed and recognize when it's time to come back to shore. So it's something we have to
learn. So is this what helped you recover?
My tools, obviously. Yeah.
So if somebody's listening to this right now, Mitel, and they're saying, oh, you know what, I've got the same thing. What is the advice? Like, what do they need to do first to start the recovery journey?
I'd actually start much smaller than people expect. Because burnout feels so big and overwhelming, the instinct is to try to fix everything, okay? So people, yeah. Okay, I'm going to change my
Boil
life.
Boil the ocean. Here's another one for you.
Yeah. But that usually backfires. So the first thing is to get really specific. Like, where is the actual pressure coming from right now? Where are you losing the most energy? Is it the uncertainty? Is it the isolation part? Is it the overload, decision fatigue? And instead of making big changes, just make one small shift exactly there. Like something that reduces pressure even a little bit. So that's usually where things start to move again. And if it's hard to see that clearly, I share quite a lot of tools and explanations on my website. There's the short assessments that helps you pinpoint where the pressure is coming from, and also articles that walk through this in a more structured way, because often just understanding what's going on already creates a sense of order. It's like someone is getting what I'm going through. And for people who feel really stuck, exhausted, and tired, and like they're running on this never-ending hamster wheel and not getting anywhere, I also created a short two-day guided reset call called Off the Wheel, something you can actually do in the moment to help you step out of that loop and regain some clarity, because that's something that's really missing in freelance burnout.
Again, a lot of our listeners are language professionals, Mitel, translating, interpreting, and I see that you're engaged with the language professionals as well. We've got many connections that there are common on LinkedIn between you and me. These individuals right now, they're often working alone, as I mentioned earlier, cross time zones. That's another one too, because when you're working within the time zone, same time zone, if you were working for a corporation, generally you're working 9 to 5, generally. But when you're working with a freelance community and you're working alone, and most likely perhaps your customers are across multiple time zones, you know, you're working at night, you're working during the day. When you're supposed to sleep, you're not sleeping. You're up working, and vice versa. What do you say to them, freelancers and interpreter translators, specifically about protecting their psychological health?
The most important things we need to remember is that mental and emotional support and isn't luxury. Like, it's basic infrastructure for freelancers. We have to do it. If we won't look out for ourselves, no one will. There's no organization, there's no HR looking at us if we're okay. We are the HR. So we have to do what we have to do to stay safe. And it's hard. I know it's easy to say, because there are all these guilt and you feel like I need to work more. And okay, if I worked all night because I have things, today it's still like it's working hours. I need to work, and you can't just go to rest or something. I get it, but it's something we need to work on. I'm still working on it every day. It's like, it's not a switch you change. It's like, it's daily working.
Of course, these things that you need to embed into your daily practice. It's like exercising. You need to actually figure out what works for you. Each individual is different. That's another one too. Not everybody can be prescribed the same things, because individuals are different. But you need to notice what the signs of burnout are. And I think we've covered those during our conversation, Mitel. And people need to figure out what works for them to make them feel better, to get out of this spiral, as you mentioned earlier, Mitel, being dragged down with the you know, the amount of work they're doing, you know, and even for me, like I notice sometimes like I'm a short fused kind of guy. I'm not, I haven't been and never been like this all my life. Sometimes like a short fuse means somebody asks me a question. If the question is like, you know, it's either a stupid question or question that comes in like differently, I just like feel like, oh my God, I'm going to blow up now, but I don't. And probably I should, but I don't.
It's good I didn't say it in the first part of our conversation that I would be.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. No, not during an interview, but, you know, I'll be working like with others. I mean, podcasting is one thing I do. I do many other things. But the individuals asking me about something or they're asking me to do something, I take a lot. But sometimes it's that what they call the straw that breaks the camel's back, that last little thing that's still hanging. And somebody comes in and pile it. And I'm thinking like, put it on top. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, now what?
Yeah, yeah. I think the more like the more we get older, the pile is like smaller and it like takes much less to crack it. So yeah, I feel it now and I'm only 40, but I feel like if it's not there, so okay. But yeah.
All right.
I think it's important to remember that like burnout freelancers are not like, it's a different state. There are people who are already burned out. They are overwhelmed and under pressure and maybe even struggling financially, and asking them to start something big or to do a big change, it's not the right fit. Like, you have to
Don't go hang out in the Bahamas for 1 month and you can't afford it.
Yeah, yeah. So like your capacity is limited. You don't want long processes or complex frameworks or not big overwhelming changes. So you need to be simple and practical and to do it like precisely.
So how can you help? How can you help the community now that listening to us? What are the services you provide? How can they reach you? What do you like them to do in contacting you if there's a possibility for that?
Yeah, of course. First of all, come to my website because I think it's very important because I didn't find anywhere else that speaks about freelance burnout at all. And this is freelanceburnout.com and everything is there. And there's the survey there. And I have a newsletter and I publish every Friday and I write articles about it and on LinkedIn and on my website. And it's very important to me that people will know more about this phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And I really think we are going to see freelance burnout becoming much more visible in the future and more openly talked about it. Because right now, a lot of people are experiencing it, but they don't always have the language and it's not outside. So come and read and find yourself. And if you need any help, I'm always happy to help freelancers. I do one-on-ones and I have the workshops and now I have the digital products. So, and if there's anything you feel and you don't find yourself in my website, just write to me. I'm really happy to talk with any freelancer.
Absolutely. And for the audience, if you can't get a hold of Mital, I'll include all the information in the post editing of this episode. But if you can't get a hold of Mital, her and I were connected together on LinkedIn. If you need to reach her out, just look me up and I'll be happy to make an introduction for you. And I'll be happy to facilitate a conversation. No problem. Mital, what did you think of this conversation today?
It was very enjoyable, I must say.
Did you like it?
It was really fun. You were really fun to talk to.
You know, I love these conversations. It educate me personally, but it educates the entire audience. And believe it or not, you know, 2.5 years ago when I started this channel, I probably said that to somebody and people laughed at me. All I wanted to do with this channel is I just want to have a conversation with people, right? And I didn't know, and I didn't think, was not my objective that I will have viewers. The first thing I did is my mother and my parents, they have a smart TV. So I put a YouTube icon on it. And I put my channel as a favorite on it. And I was hoping that when I publish something, it will pop up and my mother at least will say, oh, this is my son and I want to watch it and that kind of thing. So I was hoping my mother would watch me.
Actually, I have the same story because when I was like rehearsing, I wanted to see what your podcast looks like. And I've opened it. And then my older daughter, she's 8 years old and she's like going beside me and she said, why are you on YouTube? What are you watching? I said, no, it's a podcast. I'm going to talk it. And then she said, oh my God, you're going to be on YouTube. She saw it like I'm going to be a star now. So she was really impressed. This morning she asked, today you're going to be on YouTube. It was so funny.
Oh my goodness. How old are your kids?
My older one is 8 years old and my younger is 3.5 years old.
God bless.
Two girls.
God bless.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you so much for being part of this conversation, Mital, today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Robin.
Mital, this has been like one of those conversations I know the listeners are going to come back to. It become a reference conversation. I think this is going to become a reference conversation. The work you are doing with freelanceburnout.com is really filling a gap in the field that should have been filled long time ago. I mean, this is long time coming. It is needed. People need to be aware of it, and you bring in awareness up. Congratulations. Appreciate the work you're doing. Thank you for being generous with your story. I really appreciate how you shared your personal story with me and the audience. And I really appreciate the science that you're putting behind this today. Everybody, the links to Mittal's work will be all in the description. Reach out to Mittal if you like, or to me, and I will facilitate an introduction, no problem. And for the audience, I want to thank you for coming on YouTube. I want to thank you for watching us. I really appreciate it. And if you're coming on our podcast channels, which I really appreciate that as well, thanks for listening in. And if you are exploring or browsing through the blog post at robinayoub.blog, where I summarize all these conversations in consumable form, it's about 3-4 minute read. You don't have to listen to the entire episode. I highly encourage you do. But if you don't, you can head over to robinayoub.blog and read the summary of the conversation. Thank you, everybody, for joining me on this recording. And I will see you at the next one. I really appreciate it. Hang in there, Mittal.
Thank you.